Welcome to episode 447 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard. Richard is away tonight. He is actually in Chicago for Light Fair. Yep, there is a whole conference similar to CES, except it's just about lighting. It's basically heaven for Richard. So that's where he is this week. So you just get me. Tonight we're, our usual thing is to talk about all the latest Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And this is the week of Microsoft's biggest developer event of the year. That is their Build conference. It is going on right now. It's a developer conference, but just like Apple and Google in their developer conferences, we're used to seeing bigger, more consumer-focused announcements. It's not just code, but that's not been as true this time around. But we'll get into all of that later, plus all of the rest of the industry news going on. But first, we've got a piece of listener feedback to cover. This was sent in from Kevin to entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. That is our email address. So Kevin says, "Hey guys, in a past episode, you talked about not purchasing movies or TV shows from the Microsoft Store and wondered why anyone would. I'm one of those people that buys and rents most of my movies and content from the Windows Store. At home, I have an Xbox One and an Apple TV connected to my TV. I used to have a Windows Media Center connected as well, but with the death of Media Center, I decided to cut the cable and go over the air and use stores to buy or rent shows and movies I want to watch, along with the usual online services like Netflix and Amazon Prime. So why do I buy most of my video content from the Windows Store? I fly for work pretty frequently, usually bi-weekly, but sometimes weekly. The internet connection at hotels are terrible, so I want to get as much content on my device as possible when I'm at home with a good internet connection. I have an HP Stream 7 tablet that I just use for movies and TV shows on planes. It cost me less than $100, and I added an inexpensive 64 gig micro SD card as well. I could buy a new iPad for many hundreds of dollars, and of course I would also need to make sure I got one of the higher capacity models so I could fit the movies and TV shows on there. But that seems silly to do when I can spend well under $200 to accomplish the same task, the drawback being that I have to use Windows 10 on a tablet. This is why I'm hoping for a stripped-down OS that can run on an inexpensive tablet. I recently broke the screen on my HP Stream and went to look for a replacement. It seems like it's almost impossible to even find a Windows tablet that isn't a two-in-one device. He means like the Surface. I hope they don't kill off movies and TV, and I hope Project Polaris or CoreOS brings us a new line of devices. Do you guys think we'll see a dedicated box from Microsoft like an Apple TV that would allow access to Microsoft movies and TV? An Xbox without the Xbox part? About the only way you can watch Microsoft movies and TV shows on your TV is to purchase an Xbox One, and that seems too expensive and overkill for a segment of the population that just wants to watch movies and TV shows." Kevin, thank you for this message. I'm glad to hear that up until you broke the screen on your HP Stream, that the Microsoft movies and TV service and application has been working out well for you. Honestly, I do a very similar thing. When I travel, I bring an HP Stream 7 with me that I've loaded TV shows and movies onto a micro SD card, just like you. The only difference is I don't normally get my content from Microsoft. I either pull it down from my Plex server, which means it's either Plex DVR recordings or ripped movies that I've made or TV shows that I've like purchased from Amazon and made local recordings of using Play On. I'm about to travel this weekend, and that's exactly what I'm doing. I need to catch up on Mr. Robot. I purchased that entire season on Amazon. I used PlayOn to make local recordings of them. I just got to drag them over to the stream, and I'm good to go. I don't see much of a reason, really, to go with the Microsoft Movies and TV service still. I know it's working out great for you, but a lot of other services would too. They just, granted, they would require a little bit more work. Like, I'm using Amazon to get my shows, and the only way for me to get them on my stream is to use something like PlayOn. And your solution doesn't require an intermediary service. Now, one could say, well, you could buy an 8-inch Amazon Kindle Fire tablet for like $80. Probably has 32 gigs of storage. They have micro SD cards on them. You could buy your content from Amazon. Amazon allows you, I think. The only Kindle Fire I have in the house is currently broken, so I can't test this. But I know that the Kindle Fire tablets allow you to download content. I'm not sure if they allow you to download everything that you've purchased and or rented, but that might be a decent solution for you. The Amazon Fire tablets are pretty decent tablets. Frankly, they're better tablets than that HP Stream. I know. I've got one. I've had both of them, and a replacement Fire tablet is on the way. So I'll have another one to compare it to soon. Plus, you've actually got usable apps in that app store. Is it the full app store that you would get on a regular Android tablet? No, but you've got a lot of them. So you could do that. You could also throw Plex on there. If you're a Plex user, and if you're a Plex Pass subscriber, then, and this also works with Windows, by the way, then you can just use the sync functionality of Plex to easily copy content from your Plex server straight to your device. It's really simple to do. So those are some options there. And frankly, purchasing from those other ecosystems like Amazon or Apple, and I completely understand and agree with Kevin that if all you're looking for is a way to easily take your content with you, Apple iPad probably isn't the way to go because of the cost. But Kevin does talk about the living room, and he's right. When it comes to the Microsoft Movies and TV app and ecosystem, your only way to watch it on a TV is either an Xbox One or hooking a Windows 10 computer up to your TV, which that whole process of hooking a computer up to your TV, while this show and the DMZ basically originated around that concept and as a passion for doing that, that's not something that people are doing nearly as much of anymore, including Kevin. He used to have a Windows Media Center PC. He doesn't anymore. So it makes more sense to look for some of these other devices that can handle all of that video playback for you, like Rokus and Apple TVs and Amazon Fire TVs and Android TVs and all of these other boxes that unfortunately are all a lot cheaper than an Xbox. Now, an Xbox is a great solution if you're looking for more than just streaming video. The Xbox One, and especially the Xbox One S, can do a lot more than all of those other boxes. For one, it's 4K. Second, it's got a 4K UHD Blu-ray drive on it. You've still got access to all of those other apps like Amazon, Netflix, Hulu, Sling, YouTube TV, regular YouTube. Like, well, the regular YouTube app isn't the greatest, but there are third-party solutions for that too. You know, so you've got access to all of that stuff. And Xbox One S's can be had for pretty cheap nowadays. You know, around big sale times, they can be had for well under $250. If you wanted to pick one up used, I bet you could do it for somewhere between $150 and $200. Plus, there's the obvious benefit of being able to play the latest games. So that doesn't really answer his question, though. Do I think Microsoft is going to release a device that does all of that video playback stuff, and especially the Microsoft TV and movies stuff, that's less than an Xbox, that does less than an Xbox? No. I think that if they were going to do that, they would have done it by now. And they would have done it while they had other services like Groove Music Pass, because then they could have said, here is this device that allows us to give you quick and easy access into our video marketplace, into our music marketplace, and third-party apps. And now they don't even have one of those major pieces, the music store. So at this point, no, I don't think they're going to. And if you really want to be in that ecosystem, I think your best option is to go and find a used Xbox One S. Plus, they're super quiet, so at least you don't have to worry about it making a whole bunch of noise. It's going to be almost as quiet as any of those other set-top boxes. It's bigger, obviously, but it's also a lot more capable. So that's a pretty long-winded answer, but it was a long and really great message from Kevin. So thank you, Kevin, for sending in that message. Right back in, I want to know what you're planning to do now that your HP stream is destroyed, because with how often you fly, I'm sure you're looking for a really quick solution for your next flight. So right back in, let us know what you're doing. That's my take. And so far, I don't see any indication from Microsoft that they're going to be providing you with any other box to get access to that content on a TV. So let's get into the news now. And I want to start with Build. I almost didn't start with Build, though, because there's really not much there. And it's kind of weird. But I think it's a testament to the direction that Microsoft has been heading in. And frankly, last year's Build didn't really have that much for us to cover either. So we're just kind of continuing that same trend. But there was a little bit. So let's briefly discuss what there was there. But even this doesn't really so much fall into the entertainment category that we would normally be talking about here. But I think one of the most interesting consumer-oriented things that they did announce was a new feature coming to Windows 10, I believe in the next version of Windows. So that would be this coming fall release. So this is probably 6 months out, but will probably be available to insiders soon. And it is called Your Phone. This is basically expanded functionality around getting your Windows 10 PC to integrate more directly with your mobile phone, and knowing that your mobile phone almost definitely isn't a Windows phone. So this is specifically for working with Android phones and to some extent iOS phones, but iOS just isn't as open, and I don't expect all of this stuff to always work on iPhones. So what does Your Phone do? Well, the first and most obvious one, it allows you to read and send text messages from within an app. This isn't just Cortana. This isn't just using the Notification Center, which works okay. Like, the Notification Center does a pretty good job in Windows 10 right now of telling me when new text messages have come in, but it's kind of hit or miss on being able to respond to those messages. I've had numerous times where I've typed up a response in the notification window, hit the send button, it looks like it sends, and it never sends. So this is a full app, standalone app on its own. I'm sure it'll still tie into the Notification Center, but it's its own app and hopefully will be a little bit more reliable in tying in directly with your phone. And it probably will be, because it's doing way more than just text messages. It's also going to give you full drag and drop access to and from your phone for photos. So if you want to grab some photos off of your phone to use on your desktop, like maybe you want to throw them in a document you're working in, maybe you want to email them to somebody, maybe you want to throw them up on some shared folder on a Slack or something like that, and you don't want to use your phone to do that, you'll theoretically be able to just drag and drop them from your phone to your PC, or the other direction. You want to send a photo that you've got on your desktop to a friend via a text message, you can just drag it into the text message interface inside of the Your Phone app. So that's nice, and hopefully that'll work out really, really well. They didn't talk about many more features, at least not at an in-depth level, and they definitely didn't really show much more, but they did mention that there are more updates coming to the Microsoft Launcher, which is basically Microsoft's whole home screen and launcher interface for Android. And one of the things that they're planning to do is to bring the Windows timeline functionality, which just launched with the April 28 release version of Windows 10. They're going to integrate that into the Windows, the Microsoft Launcher. And that could actually be really useful. The timeline feature, I have a feeling, isn't going to get a ton of use on Windows PCs from casual users, because I think they're just not going to easily find it. But from power users, and it's, if we're being honest here, it's only power users that are going to install the Microsoft Launcher on their Android phone. I don't think there are many casual phone users who are switching out their launcher. So what this does is timeline in Windows from the task explorer, the task view thing, you know, that's that third icon, that's the one that's next to the Cortana button that looks like three squares next to each other that you've probably never clicked on. That used to just be a task switcher, and then that's also the place where you can add multiple desktops that almost no one uses. Well, in the latest version of Windows 10, there's also this timeline functionality that's there where it'll show you documents and other applications that you've been working on or in, and show them in a timeline view, basically. So you can go back and see this Word document that you were working on previously, tabs that you had open in Edge at different times. Well, all of that type of functionality will also be coming to that Microsoft Launcher, so that you can obviously view timeline stuff on your phone from stuff that you've been doing on your phone. But I think the idea here is that you'd also, from your phone, be able to see the timeline of stuff that you were working on your PC. And since a lot of the apps are in both places, that could actually be really nice from a productivity standpoint. So you'd be able to see what tabs you had open in Edge and open them in Edge on your phone, which, by the way, guys, Edge on Android, it's pretty good. It's absolutely worth checking out. Like, if you hate Edge on the desktop and you're like, I'm never going to try this on my phone, try it on your phone, because it's really good. And it's using the native rendering engine. So if you've got complaints about how Edge renders things on your PC, well, that's not really a concern on your phone. It's using the same rendering engine that you're already using on your phone. So there's no reason not to give this a try. So with this timeline feature, you'd be able to see tabs that you have open on your PC. You'd be able to see Word documents that you were working on. You've got Word, you've got Outlook, you've got Edge, you've got the rest of Office all on your phone. You could pick up right where you were on your PC back on your phone, and then vice versa. You know, go back and forth between the phone and the PC. And that all sounds pretty cool. So I am actually pretty excited to try that stuff out. But frankly, after 2 days of really, really long keynotes, that's kind of it in terms of consumer-focused technology news from Microsoft's Build conference this year. They spent a lot more time talking about, well, developer things. It is a developer conference, after all. One of the big areas that they spent a lot of time talking about was machine learning. Machine learning everywhere. They talked about the intelligent cloud, but also the intelligent edge, which really just means bringing some of that powerful machine learning functionality to, well, not the cloud, devices at the edge. So computers, mobile devices, IoT type devices, you know, bringing some of that functionality down into devices that you're actually interacting with on a day-to-day basis, not just the cloud. And showing some practical examples of how that could make your day-to-day life better. They had a really cool demo of some prototype devices around conference room stuff. You know, I have meetings every single day where we've got a whole bunch of people in a conference room. We're all talking into one little tiny speaker, and maybe there's a webcam up in at the one end of the room hooked up to a TV. And they had all sorts of like real-time translation stuff going on in this demonstration that's all using some machine learning to analyze who it is that's actually talking, using Cortana to pay attention to what's actually being said so that it can recognize when there are takeaways from a meeting, things that would end up on a to-do list. Cortana can just put them on a to-do list for you. A lot of really cool things like that. And frankly, I think that's the direction we're going to see Microsoft continue to go. There's a lot of web developer stuff that they talked about here. They had plenty of sessions on other Windows desktop and UWP development, of course. But I think Microsoft's involvement in our day-to-day lives as normal people is going to continue to move in a direction where it's less obvious that Microsoft isn't the logo that you're seeing, that Windows probably isn't the logo that you're seeing on a day-to-day basis, that Microsoft is powering a lot of the things that we're doing, but maybe you won't even know. You know, they'll be powering a lot of machine learning applications that you're using from just random other companies because they do a really great job with it. I mean, you can talk about Amazon's voice assistant and Google's voice assistant and all of that, but man, at the end of the day, Microsoft has amazing developer tools. And even if you couldn't care less about using Windows on your PC or Xbox or the Microsoft launcher on your phone, if you're a developer, you probably do care about the tools and services and utilities that they're building to enable you as a developer to make amazing products for other people. And as that developer, you might not have a Microsoft logo on the front-facing part of your application for users to see, and it doesn't matter. As long as Microsoft is there giving you those services to enable amazing experiences and they're still making their money out of it, then it doesn't matter so much if you're not building a UWP for Windows tablets. You know, I don't say this from a happy perspective. Like, I want to see Microsoft more front and center. I think that they make really good stuff, but they've made a lot of mistakes over the last 10 years. Their failings in mobile, you know, Windows Phone was a complete failure. You know, you might be able to say that it wasn't a complete failure in the sense that it did help to inspire other design paradigms and things like that. And obviously we see a lot of mobile design stuff in Google and in their material design, in what iOS eventually became. A lot of that does look a lot like what Microsoft did with their Metro design language and then some of their Fluent stuff and just other flat UI paradigms that they came up with. But they lost out. They lost out when it came to mobile. They lost out when it came to tablets, which I guess you could also put on your mobile. And they've basically lost, although they're still trying here, but they've basically lost when it's come to voice assistants too. And they're trying. There's still some stuff that they're working on, you know, with their partnerships between Cortana and Amazon's voice assistant. So maybe something will come of that, but that's kind of a long shot at this point. So those are the big areas where users, you know, consumers are are using technology right now. Those are the things that they see. Those are the things that people interact with and know the names of. They know the name of their iPhone or their Galaxy phone. They know Alexa. They know Google Assistant. Most people don't know Cortana, and almost no one is using a Windows phone anymore. So unless Microsoft really does know what the next big thing is, and I'm sorry, you know, we've got a lot of friends in this community that are all about mixed reality and virtual reality and stuff. I don't think that's the next big thing. It's a thing, and it's a thing that's not going away, and it's a thing that's going to continue to be cool and become more and more useful, but it's not the next big thing. HoloLens and mixed reality, they're not the next mobile phone technology. It will not ever become that ubiquitous. Maybe Microsoft does know what the next big thing is, though, and maybe they will be the ones to release it. But if they're not, and if they don't, they're going to continue to fall further and further from that front end, you know, consumer focused and consumer known space that they were for 20 years. So that's Build. It's kind of depressing. So let's move on. We actually don't have a whole lot of other news, but there's some stuff here that I definitely want to share with you all. Sling TV, this is a service we've talked about a lot in the past. It's the service that I'm currently using to watch the NHL playoffs. It's a pay TV service that works over the internet. It's the streaming service that gives you live TV service, but it also has DVR functionality. But that DVR functionality has been pretty limited as to what it would work on. For a long time, for a real long time, it pretty much only worked on mobile, like your Android phone. And that's great for traveling. It's not so great for watching on your TV. Well, they've finally released an update to expand all of the devices that do support their DVR service. And most importantly on that list is the Xbox One. Sling TV launched on the Xbox One. It's been there forever, but it's just now getting the DVR service. So it's there now. Xbox One isn't the only place to get it. If you're considering Sling TV, this DVR functionality also is available in Chrome. You can now finally Chromecast it. Yeah, that's right. It worked on Android, but you couldn't Chromecast a DVR'd show. Not until now. And then they've also launched it for some Samsung and LG smart TVs. To bring you up to speed quickly on the capabilities of the Sling TV DVR, you can use it to record multiple things at once. It's all based on, the limits are really based on storage. I think it's 50 gigabytes. Their article didn't actually say. And I think they might have tiers that allow you to expand that. But basically, you can record multiple things at once. And as you fill up your space, it's just like any other DVR, it'll delete the oldest things. But unlike some of the other services like YouTube TV, your recordings don't expire. It's not like you record a show and you've only got 2 weeks to watch it. Nope, they don't expire. As long as you continue to pay for Sling TV, your DVR shows will be there in your DVR unless you run out of space. But even if you're worried about running out of space, they've got a protect feature where you can say, you know, protect this show or protect just this episode so that as you do start to run out of space, it'll delete other things instead of those shows that you really don't want to lose. One other thing of note, Sling TV's DVR, it's not just free and bundled into their base Sling TV service. You do have to pay extra for it. It's $5 a month extra on top of your regular plan. They have really three base plans, but it's easiest to think of it as two. They've got one that starts out at $20 a month that focuses more on like the ABC, Disney, ESPN side of the content networks. One that's $25 a month, and that instead of having ESPN and those types of networks has the NBC and Fox properties. So that gets you NBC Sports and Fox Sports and those types of properties. And then they also have a combined service where you get them all. And there's also lots of add-ons for more sports channels and movies and, you know, other just little niche packages that we're used to seeing from cable providers and things like that. So Sling TV, I'm using it right now. I don't think it's the greatest thing in the world, but it's the most inexpensive of these types of services. And it does give me access to what I want. And it also gives you access to log into other apps. So I'm mostly just watching NBC Sports. If I thought that the experience wasn't very good in Sling TV, I can log into the NBC Sports app with my Sling TV credentials. And I'm pretty sure that works for ESPN and things like that. As long as you're paying for those channels, you can sign in with Sling TV to access their third-party apps. Our other piece of video news, this one is, there is really not much here than a headline. DC Comics, you know, the comics behind Batman, Superman, things like that, Justice League, they are launching their own probably streaming service. Like, that's how thin this announcement is. It's going to be a streaming service, but it's probably going to be more than that too. But they haven't said anything other than they're launching a new service. It's called DC Universe, and it's going to have some shows on it that will only be available on this new platform. What are those shows? Well, they're going to have a show for Titans, a new show for Swamp Thing, a show for Young Justice Outsiders. This is one I've never even heard of. And a Harley Quinn show. And those will only be available on whatever this DC Universe service ends up being. We don't know when. We don't know what else is there. We don't know if this will include some sort of comic tie-in or anything like that. And we don't know how much. None of that has been announced here. Just that it exists. It's coming. It'll have at least these four shows and probably some other stuff. And if you want more information, sign up for their newsletter to be notified when they actually give us some real information. So if you're into DC Comics, go and sign up for their newsletter so that you can see what this actually turns into. I probably won't. I'm not into DC Comics at all. At all. I don't like Batman. I don't like Superman. Don't like Justice League. Don't care about any of that. So I won't be one of those people signing up for DC Universe, whatever it turns out to be. But there are plenty of DC fans out there who I'm sure are anxious to get access to this. There's been basically no big Xbox news over the last, like, we haven't done a show in 2 weeks, and there's still basically nothing to talk about from the Xbox front. But there's a really good reason for that. You know what's happening in about a month? E3, you know, the biggest gaming event of the year. Yeah, that is June 10th. That's when Microsoft's E3 press briefing will be. That's a Sunday. It's going to happen at 1 p.m. Pacific, so 4 p.m. Eastern. If you're not in one of those two time zones, you're probably used to doing the math at this point. I'll be tuned in. I expect good things. Microsoft doesn't usually disappoint when it comes to their E3 press briefing, but I'm not entirely sure what to expect at this point. I don't think we're going to get a Halo game this fall. I expect to hear about Crackdown. I expect there to be an actual release date for Crackdown, probably a Forza game in the fall. Other than that, not really sure. Don't really have many expectations in terms of hardware, unless they decide to do a new version of the Elite controller. We're kind of about due for that, so that would be nice to see. But outside of that, don't expect any big hardware announcements. They'll, of course, announce more backwards compatibility titles, probably original Xbox and 360. But other than that, that's probably about it. It's mostly, I think, going to be a games-focused show this year, which for you gamers, I'm sure you'll be very, very pleased to hear that. As always, there are new deals with gold and a new spotlight sale to cover. And this is, in terms of titles that are on sale, it's big. There are a ton of games on sale. So go and check it out. There's a bunch of Assassin's Creed games for sale. Even the newest one, it's not marked down that much, but it's on sale, and pretty much it seems like every other Assassin's Creed game ever made. All on sale, so go and check those out. Another thing worth pointing out, Ubisoft released a game last year called For Honor. It's a more of a medieval melee combat sort of game. It got really popular. There's a season pass for it. That season pass is normally $40. It's on sale for $16. If you're interested in For Honor, this is kind of a no-brainer. And it stands out to me because a lot of times these season passes don't go on sale. Like, a lot of times it's hard to find discounts on the DLC that you actually want. So this one is worth pointing out and picking up if you're a fan of For Honor. Another one that stood out to me was Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. This is a game that's really, really enjoyed by lots of families because it's a first-person multiplayer shooter, basically, but it's a lot more family-friendly. It's not bullets and blood and all that stuff. It's Plants vs. Zombies. And it's on sale for $5 right now when it's normally $20. That's kind of a no-brainer. Unless you're into lots of other EA games, then you should just subscribe to EA Access because this game and so many other games are free with EA Access. And EA Access is only $30 a year to get access to all of those games whenever you want. So that's your recommendations on your deals with gold for this week. And a quick recap of your games with gold. These ones are free if you have an Xbox Live Gold subscription. You only have until May 15th to pick up Assassin's Creed Syndicate on Xbox One. But all month long, you can get Super Mega Baseball 2. This is a brand new game available to you for free. And it sounds like it's pretty good. But frankly, you don't have many options for baseball games on Xbox. And while it looks super cartoony, what I'm hearing is it's more realistic in terms of the baseball mechanics than you might expect by just looking at the screenshots. So if you're looking for a baseball game, there's no reason not to check out Super Mega Baseball 2. On May 16th, right around the corner, you're going to be able to get Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, one of the best games released in, I think that was 2014. That was a big year. I think that's the year The Witcher came out and Fallout 4. It was a big game, and this was one of the biggest games that released that year, and you're getting it for free. On the Xbox 360 side, you've got Sega Vintage Collection Streets of Rage up until May 15th, and for the second half of the month, Vanquish. That's the action shooter third-person game that I'm really excited to check out. And frankly, anytime I've heard anyone mention May's Games with Gold, Vanquish is the title that everyone talks about. So you'll want to pick that up in the second half of the month. And as a reminder, those 360 games, they're backwards compatible. They always are if they're in Games with Gold. So grab those even if you don't have a 360. Before we get out of here, I did want to hit on one other industry related news story, and that is while Microsoft Build is going on, Google's developer conference is also going on. It's called Google I/O. There has been a ton of news from there, including a bunch of consumer focused news that, you know, us Microsoft fans aren't getting. And one of them is some new announcements from Android TV. And Android TV is that operating system that powers the NVIDIA Shield TV and a couple of other boxes, but the Shield is really the powerhouse in the segment. Well, there's a new Android TV device that's been announced this week from JBL. It's called the JBL Link Bar. This is a unique device. It is a sound bar that's also an Android TV and also a Google Assistant speaker and also effectively an AV receiver because it's got three HDMI inputs. All of them can be controlled with your voice because it's a Google Assistant speaker. So of course it's got the built-in far field microphones and stuff. The remote control also has a microphone built into it. So this is an Android TV device, which is pretty nice. That's what our primary device is in my house now. For watching streaming video and stuff like that. Android TV devices automatically have Chromecast, so you're getting that. you're getting a really nice, theoretically, a really nice speaker for your TV, plus to use with your Google Home stuff so that you can be Chromecasting music to it or using Spotify or any of the other devices that tie into Google Home from some nice speakers. And it's all voice controlled. So this sounds really cool. It's coming this fall. It's just been announced. So we don't know exactly when. We don't know the price, but this sounds like a really cool product. So I'll be following this one because I think that's a really smart device to pack all of that into one device. It would make perfect sense it would make lots of sense in many living rooms, but it would also make a lot of sense in bedrooms and other places where you've got TVs, but maybe don't want to have a full, 5.1 or 7.1 or Atmos surround sound setup, or where that's just not practical. You could do this and have all of the functionality that you're probably looking for in a smaller place. Google also clearly isn't giving up on Android TV, even though it doesn't seem like there's really been that much movement on it. They've got a new version of Android for Android TV. It's using their new version of Android P. And to encourage more developers to get working on it, they're releasing a new device for developers called the ADT2. It looks like a Chromecast dongle, but it's a full Android TV device. It doesn't sound like consumers are going to be able to purchase it, but it's going to be an Android P-based Android TV device that will allow developers to easily work on writing more apps for Android TV. So that's good. And then they also announced that they've been talking with lots of cable companies and things like that to try and build some partnerships to maybe get rid of the junky UI that's on a lot of these terrible cable boxes and instead give you Android TV, because Android TV, it's pretty good, or at least way better than most of the crap we have to deal with on cable boxes that we're also paying a monthly subscription for. So that's good news. Basically, even if you hate Android, that's still pretty good news because it's still better than whatever you've probably been using. All right, that's it for our news. To recap what I've been watching and doing in my entertainment center and at the movie theaters, we'll hit on that real quick. Obviously, hockey, lots of hockey. I've watched every single Penguins game in the playoffs, and unfortunately, there aren't any more because last night my Penguins lost. I am truly, and this is somewhat ridiculous, I am actually saddened. It was hard to see them lose. It's hard to even comprehend that their season is over at this point after they won back-to-back Stanley Cups. But I'm trying to move on, trying to move forward. I'm rooting for the Vegas Golden Knights now. That's just a crazy story. So not done watching hockey yet, but probably won't be watching as much as I was since the Penguins aren't going to be there. So I guess I get to answer the question that Richard had for me a couple of episodes ago, where he wondered, if the Penguins weren't there, would you still be watching as much playoff hockey? It won't be as much, but it'll still be a fair amount, I think. Okay, movies. Avengers Infinity War is out. I still haven't seen it. We're still trying to catch up on the movies that we absolutely have to watch. We've narrowed that down, thanks to a bunch of you, to Guardians of the Galaxy, at least one of them, at least the first one, and Doctor Strange. Well, this weekend, we watched Guardians of the Galaxy. You can probably already guess what I'm going to say. It was fine. It was a lot of humor. It's a big time comedy in the Marvel space, which is not what I want. So it was okay. It wasn't bad. I completely understand why so many people loved this movie. It's just not for me. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. It's just not for me. But I'm glad that I watched it. I'm glad that I have a much better understanding of that part of the Marvel Universe, because that's going to be really important for when we finally get to see Infinity War. So we still have Doctor Strange to watch. I'm not sure when we're going to watch it, but we really need to get to it soon because we do really want to see Infinity War while it's still in theaters. The night that Infinity War came out, we were at the movies. Yep. But not watching Infinity War. Instead, we went and saw The Quiet Place. Yeah, a horror movie. Longtime listeners, you know that we don't see horror movies. We don't see scary movies. We haven't seen a scary movie, my wife and I, well, at least the two of us together, haven't seen a scary movie since our first date in college. In 2002, that movie was The Ring. It scared the crap out of my wife to the point where she didn't want to watch any more scary movies. But she got convinced by a friend that we should go and see The Quiet Place. And it was good. It's not a horror movie. It's not even really that scary. It's really, really intense. A lot of anxiety in this movie. I liked it. I'm not going to say I loved it. I don't think I'm going to put it on like my movie of the year list or anything like that. But it was good and worth seeing in the theaters, because the quietness of it it's something very different to experience in a theater. So if it's still in theaters near you and you've already seen Infinity War, go and check it out. It's cool. You should check it out. That's it for me. I think I already mentioned earlier that I'm hoping to catch up. I'm hoping to finish season 3 of Mr. Robot, because I love that show. And I'm going to be on a plane a lot this weekend, so maybe I'll be able to get through the remaining episodes of that. I would like to, because I'd also really like to get back to The Americans and Homeland and all of those other shows that I love that aren't comedies. Yeah, that's right. Sticking with my serious shows. But that's going to do it for my Entertainment Center section. Another quick reminder, Richard is at Light Fair all week long. Lots of lighting news, lots of smart home stuff to be coming out of that. So follow us on Twitter or on Instagram. We now have an Instagram feed. It's DigiMediaZone, just like our Twitter feed. So check that out. Richard's going to be posting all sorts of photos from Light Fair over there. And then if you're into all of that smart home stuff that Richard covers, you'll want to check out Home On, his other podcast. The current episode available is when he sat down with Nick Langston to cover all of the latest news in the smart home space. The next episode, he's sitting down with the CEO of a company called Hubitat. So you'll want to check that out, especially if you're into the more DIY tinkerer space, you know, things like smart things. If that's your thing, you're going to want to listen to that episode for sure. My other podcast has been rolling along. That's Story Players, where we play and analyze story-driven video games. We're in the middle of a new series. We're playing Final Fantasy 15 two different ways. We're playing it. I'm playing it on the Xbox. Joe is playing the Pocket Edition on his Android. And then we get together to discuss the similarities, the differences, whether we think the story is coming through at all in either of those platforms. And it's been fun to work on this one. It's different, and I don't think anyone else is doing anything like this. So check out Story Players. Those episodes are going to release weekly until we're done. We think it's going to be 6 episodes. It's probably going to be 6 episodes. So keep subscribed to Story Players to get that. And if you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. And again, it's the same thing to follow us on Instagram. And we're on Facebook, facebook.com/theDMZ. And you can also watch this show, participate in this show while we record Entertainment 2.0 Live. It's normally weekly, Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's not always, so your best bet is to follow us on Twitter, because we always tweet about when the show is going to be live, and then come and join the chat room and see the live video and hear the live audio while we record the episodes. Unfortunately, there may not be an episode next week. I'm going to be gone. We'll see. Follow Twitter to find out for sure, because that's going to do it for episode 447. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.